This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Raise Your Game and I'm Tasha Fusil. No matter how you define success, you can't get there without this one thing, self-discipline. But as speaker, author, and strategist Rory Vadden explains, we live in an escalator world, which is a world that's filled with shortcuts, quick fixes, and distractions that make it all too easy to slide into procrastination, compromise, and ultimately, mediocrity. So I'm here with Rory, who is a self-discipline expert, to find out how successful people achieve results and overcome procrastination. Welcome to the show, Rory. Let's start with your book. Why did you name the book Take the Stairs?
Well, the way that plays out is if you just think of the last time that you were in front of a set of escalators and some stairs, did you take the stairs? And for most of us, we did not. Most of us use the escalator. We kind of naturally gravitate towards the path of least resistance. We migrate towards the easiest thing. And yet, as we have studied over the last 10, 15 years, the story of success of all different organizations, all different type of individuals, teams, nonprofit, profit, the entrepreneurs, athletes, celebrities, when you really understand and you study and you look at the story of success, what you find out is that the only thing that every single successful person has in common is that successful people form the habit of doing the things they know they should be doing even when they don't feel like doing them. In other words, success is not about taking the escalator. Success is about taking the stairs, doing those things that we know we should do even when we don't feel like doing them. And so the Take the Stairs book is really about understanding the psychology of overcoming procrastination, improving self-discipline, increasing productivity, and how do the world's ultra-performers get themselves to do the things they know they should be doing even when they don't feel like it.
And does the book look to dispel any sort of myths about success?
Well, I think the world recently has bought into some of the overnight secret, like the overnight success or the secret or what's the magic pill or the hidden potion. And it's really easy to gravitate towards those kinds of things. The reality is that regardless of what it is that you're pursuing, at some point you're going to be faced with the procrastination point, mm-hmm. that point at which you decide to put off doing the things you know you need to do, or are you going to engage and charge forward and go directly at them? And that is really the pivot point. That is the moment that dictates whether or not somebody will become one of the world's ultra performers, that is in the top 1%, or if they will sort of sink back to the middle of the path. And I think it's just really easy and it's really popular to believe in a magic pill or a secret potion or a hidden formula. And we waste a lot of time thinking that there's some shortcut. And the story of success, when you really get into it with the world's ultra performers, is that it is really about taking the stairs.
Right. And when, you know, when we really try to hone in on what it is that makes us procrastinate, what's getting us distracted, I feel like the book suggests that it's really about how we rely or default too much to our emotions. Is that right?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. Some of the challenge of overcoming procrastination is rooted in the neuroscience and the biology of our brain. The neuroscientists kind of say that our brain is divided into these three parts. We sort of have our animal brain, our mammal brain, and then we have the prefrontal cortex, which is the front part of our brain, or the human brain, which is in charge of logic. And the key insight to understand about the way that our brain was designed was to program us for survival, but not necessarily for success. And so we are designed to function based on what makes us feel good and feel safe in the short term. And yet when it comes to the choices that dictate and lead to a successful business or successful marriage or successful finances or personal health or whatever, most of those things happen in the long term. And the pain paradox of Take the Stairs, the paradox principle, which is the first of the seven principles and methodologies in Take the Stairs, is that easy short-term choices lead to difficult long-term consequences. Meanwhile, difficult short-term choices lead to easy long-term consequences. So the great paradox there is that what seems like the easy way in life, doing whatever we want, saying whatever we want, eating whatever we want, you know, buying things on credit even if we can't afford them, those things that seem like the easier path, they actually lead to the more difficult life. And inversely, the things that seem hard, the things that seem like a sacrifice, really aren't a sacrifice, but they're a short-term down payment on these rich future blessings. And ultra performers have realized that procrastination and indulgence are really nothing more than creditors that charge us interest.
Can you give us an example of some of the more common situations where you might see this pain paradox in action?
Well, I mean, there's a million. Probably buying things on personal credit would be an example, right? We walk in and we see something on sale and we don't really have the money for it, but we have a credit card that allows us to purchase it now. And we convince ourselves in the short term that I really do need a new TV, and look at all this money I'm going to save by buying it now. Well, when you factor in the long-term calculation of all the amount that you'll potentially pay in interest, that TV becomes much more expensive and you end up paying a whole lot more for it over the long run than if you would have just saved up, even if you had to pay full price, but if you would have saved money and paid cash for it, that it would have saved you money compared to what you're going to pay slowly but over the long term. It's the same with, you know, eating. We indulge in things that look good in the short term, and yet those are the things that cause obesity or heart disease and, you know, can lead to diabetes and things like that. And yet we often reject discipline as this part that is so difficult and I don't want to do it, yet we don't realize that not being disciplined is what creates the much more challenging life in the long term. And so Take the Stairs is not about making life as hard as possible. Quite the contrary, it's about making life as easy as possible, but it's based on the true premise that may be unpopular, but it's the truth that success comes from often doing the hardest parts of things as soon as possible.
I suppose a lot of us are aware of this fact. We know that there are really no shortcuts when it comes to saving money, when it comes to being healthy. But how exactly do we work our way around our very instinctual and emotional approach to decision making? You know, how do we tell? Because I feel like telling our brain to simply focus on the long-term benefits, it seems like a futile attempt. You know, that's why we're in debt. That's why we're always on a diet.
Well, I mean, that's really what Take the Stairs is all about, is it's exploding these 7 misconceptions people have about self-discipline. I think part of the reason the book's become pervasive in many different languages is because people are realizing that self-discipline isn't as hard as we think when we know how to think about it the right way. I think, on the one hand, it's really easy to say, well, thinking long-term does kind of seem futile because it's like, well, I kind of know that it's not the right thing. But it's because people have a hard time thinking in a visceral fashion about long-term. Mm-hmm. And if they're able to do that, then that really is the solution, because the amount of our endurance is directly proportionate to the clarity of our vision. And when we have a crystal clear picture of what we want for our life and for our future, then there is a naturally strong connection to how those sacrifices we're asking ourselves to make today forward us towards a future that we care about. It thereby creates this context for action to take place, and our discipline engages automatically. We don't have to motivate ourselves. It's a byproduct. People think they either have discipline or they don't, and that's not really true. We all have discipline. It's just that discipline becomes dormant in the absence of a dream. If you have a cloudy vision of what you want in the future, or you don't spend much time thinking about it, then there is at best a weak connection to how the sacrifices we're asking ourselves to make today forward us towards a future that we care about. And so there is no context for action. It becomes hard for anyone to motivate themselves. But to just say generically, think long term, that doesn't carry much weight. We don't have an emotional response to that. But I'll give you an example. There was a gentleman who came up to me after a presentation I did in Bogota, Colombia, and he was in great physical health, and he said, you know, Rory, I know I don't look like it, but a couple of years ago I was 120 pounds heavier than I am right now. So that was about an extra third. It was about 33% heavier than he was. So it was a pretty massive amount of weight. And what he told me, as I asked him, I said, was it some vitamin that you took, or was it like a workout routine that you started on? He said, no, it wasn't any of those things. What happened was his best friend was married, had a wife and three kids, and one night he woke up in the middle of the night, and there was smoke everywhere in his room, and his house was on fire. And his best friend had to make a decision in that moment about who he was going to try to carry out of that house, and the house is burning down. And apparently some of the people in his family died that night.
Wow.
And this gentleman that was telling me the story, he said, well, Rory, it really changed my whole life, because I realized in that moment that if I were ever in that position, I would need to be strong enough to carry my entire family out of that house, because I would rather die than have to make that decision. And so it wasn't 21 days to form a habit. It wasn't some magic pill or, you know, special workout routine. It was the vivid realization of an image that was very close to him, an actual picture that he could see of his house burning down and him having to choose which of his family members he was going to rescue and carry out. And for, you know, of course, the likelihood of that happened to him is probably not that high, but having that visceral image creates this emotional response that pushes us past the point of laziness. It pushes us past the point of indulgence. Now, that would be an example of a negative vision. That's kind of away motivation. You're motivated to move away from something negative happening. But the same is true if you have a very detailed and specific picture that you see in your mind of some success that you want to achieve. And the more clarity you have about that picture, and the more frequently you think about it, the more likely your discipline is to engage, and you are to be able to push past those fears and those indulgences and the procrastination point.
All right. Well, we'll talk about how to sustain that image that's going to keep us motivated when we're feeling the urge to procrastinate in a bit. So stay tuned. This is Raise Your Game on BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're still here on Raise Your Game with me, Tasha Fusil. I've got Rory Vadden, a self-discipline expert, here with me, and we've been talking essentially about how to overcome procrastination. A few minutes ago, Rory, you spoke about needing a clear vision of what you need to achieve and why. So say we have established that vision and that image or anchor of whatever it is that's going to get us through, how do we then keep our focus and not get caught up on the struggles of the day-to-day?
Well, that's a great question. And Tasha, it's absolutely through intention. We just recently, I have a weekly podcast, and I also post a blog three times a week, and we just did this mini-series about the 7 realizations of rich people, where we went and we studied what are the most common characteristics or attributes of people who are of very high net worth. And one of the most common characteristics that we found is that they fall asleep at night thinking about what it is that they want for the future. And not in just a general sense, like I want to have more money or I want to have a nice house, but if it was a house, they picture the house and they can see it in vivid detail. In fact, one of the techniques we talk about is called VAST, V-A-S-T. Mm-hmm. And the V is something that you can see visually. The A is something auditory that you can hear. The S is something you can smell. And the T is something you can touch. And when you think about your vision, and most people are not good at thinking about vision because we're taught as kids to not daydream. And yet the most successful entrepreneurs in the world, the wealthiest people, spend time thinking in great detail about what it is they want. And they can not only see it, but they can hear. If you were living in that moment that you're pursuing, what would you be able to hear? What would you be able to smell? What would you be able to touch? Who would be with you? And what would you be feeling like in addition to what can you see? And that makes the shift from thinking in an abstract or obscure way about the long term to thinking in a very detailed way. And your brain cannot really delineate between reality and dreams when it comes to that. It's the reason why sometimes we have nightmares and we wake up in the middle of the night and our heart is racing and our palms are sweating and it's like we're filled with fear or something, because our brain is replaying this picture that it occurs to the brain as very real, because all the brain is doing is interpreting these impulses that are the result of pictures. And so the more you practice and the more you're intentional about reliving that vision over and over and over and reconnecting to it, the more that your life and your body and everything kind of seems to orchestrate around it, making that come true. And your mind has already seen it, so it believes that it's real. And then it's not just some cosmic thing where it just happens automatically, but you start to move in the direction and do the work necessary to make that vision a reality.
Does getting this mindset require you to kind of give up all those short-term indulgences that you have? Like, you know, I enjoy watching TV, I enjoy my time out, I enjoy switching my brain off. You know, it sounds like you can't really be a successful person with this kind, you know, if you have this kind of interests.
No, that's not at all what it is. In fact, if you do all this right, you should gain more free time and you should have more fulfillment and more joy and better relationships, not less. Now, it does mean that you may have to adjust the way that you think about, you know, how you spend your time. And there's three types of procrastination that we talk about, but one of the newer ones is what we call creative avoidance. And creative avoidance is unconsciously filling the day with menial work or trivial work as a way of creating stuff for yourself to do so that you can do that as a way of avoiding doing the things you really need to be doing that you don't feel like doing. And yet we create these insignificant or trivial tasks that we can cross off on our to-do list. And when we cross them off or we delete an email in our inbox, we get this shot of dopamine, which is the pleasure drug, right? It makes us feel good. It makes us feel like we've done something valuable. But that is really just a short-term fix. And what the world's ultra performers, and this is really what we tackled in our new book that just came out, it's called Procrastinate on Purpose, 5 Permissions to Multiply Your Time. What multipliers have realized is that today success is no longer related to the volume of tasks that you complete, but the significance of them. And so they will trade the idea of doing 100 insignificant emails for the idea of doing 1 or 2 very significant tasks and getting those done, because they're really going to advance them towards their goals. But you're not sacrificing anything in the way of free time, at least in the long run. Now, at least in America, the average American watches something like 27 hours a week of television. So is that an opportunity to gain margin? Absolutely. But, you know, most people who watch television, it's not just to unplug. It's more because they don't have something that's so compelling that's pulling them towards that's worth making the sacrifice. And so they fill their time with insignificant things. So it's not that you would never watch television again, but I think if you study the impacts of being completely unplugged for 27 hours every single week where you're not, your brain isn't even engaged, then there's some negative impacts to that. But that happens more, again, in the absence of a dream. And it's not that watching TV or surfing Facebook or any of those things inherently in and of themselves are bad, but too much of those things can be indicators that we're not really compelled by a higher, more inspiring vision.
I really like what you said. I think in a video you said your pastor said to you that, you know, what we spend our time and money on is what we believe in most. And it's one of those statements that really gets you to think about what your priorities and what your beliefs are. It may have been things that you just didn't really, it just sort of happens on autopilot.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, if you want to know what someone really believes in, you just look at their calendar and their checkbook. Because whatever they're spending their time and their money on is really ultimately what they believe in the most. And it should be a sobering wake-up call for all of us to go back and audit how we're spending our time. Because if at one point we look back on our life and we say, did my life count for something? I mean, would we really be proud to say, well, you know, I watched every single episode of this or that TV show.
Right.
I mean, is that really what we want our life to count for? Or is it more that I used my creative abilities, I used my God-given talents, I worked really hard doing the things that I was passionate about in a way that they impacted the world and they served other people? And those things are the things that matter ultimately to us in the long run. And our ability to do those, or the likelihood that we will achieve those, is directly related to our ability to stay connected to that vision and be willing to take the stairs, be willing to do the work that other people may not be willing to do so that you can accomplish the significant things.
What are the questions can we ask ourselves, you know, so that we can reflect and get our mindset and our attitude shifted towards the right direction?
I think you can always be asking yourself, what am I saying no to? What am I giving up by doing this? Because it's impossible to go through life without saying no. Anytime you say yes to one thing, you simultaneously are saying no to an infinite number of others. So if you're saying yes to watching TV, then you ask yourself the question, what am I trading by giving this, by spending this time here? What am I giving up? What goal or dream do I have that maybe is falling, I'm exchanging that for the opportunity to watch television or, you know, whatever. And again, there's some healthy balance where it's worth spending that time on those things, because it's not about working nonstop and never taking a break. That's not what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But it is about being mindful and intentional that you are working towards your goals. And one thing I would really invite people to do is, if you go to procrastinateonpurpose.com, there is, we put together a free 1-hour webinar. And it's based on the premise that the way you multiply time is by investing time into things today that create more time tomorrow. It will radically change the way you think about time management forever. So I'd say that. And then the last little thing that I would leave everybody with, Tasha, is just remember, no matter who you are and what you did yesterday, for all of us, success is never owned. Success is only rented. And the rent is due every day.
That was Rory Vadden, author of Take the Stairs and an expert on helping to overcome procrastination. Thanks for listening. This has been Raise Your Game on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.